Okay. Well, what I wanted to do with you is brief. I'm going to spend a lot of time on it next year. One of the things that fascinates me is that, right, there are some people who talk about halacha, and they think that nothing really changed. Like, everything was given word for word to Moshe at Sinai, and therefore the notion that there was, like, serious halachic change throughout the generations bothers them. Or there were alternate interpretations bothers them. But we know from Chazal that the simple from Chazal, that's not true, right? My favorite example is the case of Yehareg Valyavor, right, where the Gemara actually quotes a vote, right, that there was a vote. What things are cardinal sins, right? And they went up and they voted and they decided it was murder and forbidden relationships and avodah zarah. Now, some people don't take that seriously, right? Oh, there was a vote. Except we know from the Book of Maccabees that, in fact, there were people who held different things, because the Book of Maccabees tells us that there were groups who got killed because they refused to fight on Shabbat because they thought Shabbat was overrode Pikuach Nefesh. And then Matityahu got up and said, we can't keep doing this because we'll all be killed, and changed the law or reinterpreted the law or whatever he did. But clearly, there really were machlokot about this. So that you at least have evidence of in Chazal, right, that there's a change. But here, this is not in Chazal, but, and literally, it's so uniformly rejected by Chazal, clearly, that they don't even bring it up. But by Shemitah, there's a fascinating one, where you really have to wonder, why is it that Chazal were so convinced that this wasn't true, that it didn't even make it into their traditions, when we know that contemporaneous Jews indeed did. And that is the question of what is one required to rest from during Shemitah? Right, so our tradition, all of our halachic traditions, assume that what do you rest from in Shemitah? Working the land. And then we get into the question, what counts as working the land? What's biblical? Right, plowing and planting and pruning and da-da-da-da-da-da and fruit trees and not fruit trees, and what about in the sixth year and what about in the eighth year? Right, but everything, the assumption is kedavar pashut, that the only thing that is possibly prohibited has to do with agriculture, right? And that's it. But that was not the only possibility. Because what else? The Torah calls it Shabbat LaHashem. And in fact, in many halachic things, we really do derive things from Shabbat, right? According to at least some positions in Chazal, we learn Tosefet Shvi'it from Tosefet Shabbat, that we add to Shemitah and don't work before, right? I saw on Shabbos, the Sefer Nir even argues that Mekalkel is Mutter during Shemitah, following the pattern of Malachot on Shabbat. I mean, that's a bit radical. But what else, once you call Shvi'it Shabbat, what else might that mean?
What's
destructive actions, which are Mutter on Shabbat. Right, only constructive or us are, right? So what else might Shabbat mean? Right. We're so used to saying that Shabbat Haaretz means that it just means rest from agricultural. But what else might it mean? Right. What else does Shabbat mean? Meaning what? So you could have thought that it would be all malacha, right? A year of no malacha. Right. Now that's a bit radical.
That's
and as far
or the destructive acts.
Oh, no, that was just a Sefer Nir. That's like an Achron. My point is just that we really do compare Shabbat and Shemitah a lot because of the linguistic connections.
Right.
Because they're both called Shabbat. They're both 6-in-1 patterns. Right? There's a lot to suggest itself that Shabbat and Shemitah are very similar. Right? Forget the Mekalkel thing.
Okay.
Forget the Mekalkel.
Okay.
My point was just that the Sefer Nir is so convinced that Shemitah is parallel to Shabbat that he borrows from the actual halachot of the Malacha on Shabbat in defining what's Asur on Shemitah.
Okay.
But, okay, forget that. If that was too complicated, forget that. I'll do that next year.
Okay?
It's a weird sheet in the Sefer Nir. I just saw it in Shabbat, so it's on my mind. So you might have actually thought, right, that Shabbat means Shabbat. Now that, admittedly, as far as I know, no one ever suggested. But there was a tradition found in many early Svarim, right, many early books that are contemporaneous or even before Chazal, that had a different tradition that did extend Shabbat beyond working the land, not to full Isra Malacha, but to a very bizarre prohibition, and that was to wage war. And like I said, I had to read it to you. But here, you want me to read you the Hebrew, or you want me to read you the English of Maccabees? Concerning all we have is the Greeks. It's all translation. English. Good. Okay. So in Maccabees 1, you get the following. Now when it was told the king's servants and the host that it was Jerusalem and the city of David, that certain men who had broken the king's commandment were gone down into the secret places in the wilderness, they pursued after them a great number. And having overtaken them... Oh, sorry. Is this the... No, I'm sorry. That was the one that I mentioned before about Matthew. The next one. Here. I'll read you from Josephus, okay? Josephus, in Antiquities of the Jews 13. Okay? Definitely in Greek, so the English, don't feel bad. But when Bacchides knew that Jonathan had pitched his camp among the lakes of Jordan, he observed when their Sabbath... Wait, why do I keep doing this? I put this all on one page and I keep going to the Shabbat side of it. Ah. There we go. Forgive me. Yeah, here, later on in Josephus. Right, Josephus, it's later on in the same section, 13:8. So Ptolemy retired to one of the fortresses that was above Jericho, which was called Dagon. And then he goes on, but Hyrcanus, having taken the high priest that had been his father's before in the first place, propitiated God by sacrifices, etc., etc. For Ptolemy brought down upon them the wall and tormented them in the sight of all and threatened that he would throw them down headlong and then Hyrcanus would leave off the siege. Right? You have this brotherly war. Right? They're fighting against each other. How did he eventually win? So he said, now when his mother said so, he resolved to take the fortress immediately. But when he saw her beaten and torn to pieces, his courage failed him, and he could not but sympathize with what his mother suffered, and was thereby overcome. And as the siege was drawn out into length by this means, the year in which the Jews used to rest come on, for the Jews observe this rest every seventh year, as they do every seventh day. So the Ptolemy, being for this cause released from the war, he slew the brethren of Hyrcanus and his mother, and when he had so done, he fled to Zeno, who was called Catulus, who was then the tyrant of the city Philadelphia. Right, what did he do? He waited till Shemitah. One brother was from, one brother was not. And he couldn't beat him, so he said, aha, I'll just wait till Shemitah, and Shemitah they won't fight me. They'll let me kill them, because I'm not from and they are. So he waited till Shemitah, when they don't wage war, and he killed them. Right? Same tradition we have by Maccabees about Shabbat, we have here in Josephus, and in Qumran we have it as well. During the remaining 33 years of the war, the men of renown, those called to the congregation, all the heads of the congregation's clans, shall choose for themselves men of war for all the lands of the nations. From all tribes of Israel they shall prepare capable men for themselves to go out for battle according to the summons of the war year by year. But during the years of remission, they shall not ready men to go out for battle, for it is a Sabbath of rest for Israel. Right? Meaning Shemitah, they won't go to war. Josephus has it again in War of the Jews, Book 1, Chapter 2. This time in the case of Ptolemy against John. And what I think is fascinating about this, right, this I found in Safrai's introduction to Shemitah, into to Shviat, is that we have this idea that like halacha hasn't changed, or there weren't like radical other traditions, or rather radical other interpretive traditions. But it's important to remember, like the halacha that we have is a choice, right? Or the product of choices, right? And I don't mean that like arbitrary, right? Choices, meaning exegetical choices, right? Choices of which tradition, whatever you think went into it. But the fact is that Judaism very much looked different to different groups. And you can even explain very plausibly how it emerged from the Psukim. And in case of Shemitah, I don't really know what to do with it except to say that we are convinced that Shemitah means a rest from agriculture. Right? But when you realize there were other Jewish traditions that were contemporaneous or even earlier than Chazal, right, who didn't believe that, who thought that in order for something to be called Shabbat legitimately, it needs to have other elements which are beyond just don't plant, right? Then you realize that Chazal are staking out a position. Okay, I don't know if it's choice. I don't know who's right, right? But they're staking out a position that Shemitah has to do with agriculture and not about other things, right? And that's but if you don't realize that was an option, right, even a live option, then you don't realize that Chazal were doing something when they limited it to agriculture. Right? But the second you realize that there's another world, then you realize that, oh, Chazal are actually saying something. That as similar as Shemitah is to Shabbat, it's not Shabbat. It's an agricultural rest, right? But nothing else. Where there were other people who lived in the time of Chazal who didn't believe that. Who said, no, there's no such thing as a Shabbat only of land. Shabbat has to manifest itself in other things. And therefore, you get, right? Then it forces you to ask the question, then what exactly are Chazal doing? Right? And this is one of those things that, you know, like I said, I'm going to think about it more next year when we learn Shvi'id. But I think it's really important to realize the extent to which other options really existed, and therefore the tradition of Chazal is really saying something about the essence of Shemitah, what it is and what it's not. And you only realize that if you have a little bit of historical sense and realize what else is going on, which, like I said, is only mildly shocking to me, or very shocking. When I found it, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I didn't even know that existed. Also, you've got to wonder, like, why is it that even amongst any text that we have from other non-rabbinic groups, even there they had no Havamina, there was Nishra Malacha, it was only war. What is it about war? Right? That's a very interesting question, right? Like, what is it about war, of all things, that they would expand it to and not Malacha? I mean, if they had said that all Malacha was Usher, I mean, that's a pretty hard year to live, but at least exegetically, I understand, but where they got the notion that Shabbat only means war, I have no idea. Like, what were people thinking? And I think it's really important to think, like, what were the conceptualizations of Shemitah that were going on that led to this type of interpretation and Chazal's, I wouldn't even say rejection, because in this case, they don't even relate to it, right? Right?
Just not even something they
can. Right? There's a lot, not even Olala Perek. Like, what is. But at least you have to think about it, right? And the more you realize what's going on in the conversations or in the world at that time, the more you realize how, right, again, the choices that were made to get the tradition to look the way it is. Okay.